Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Today's episode is brought to you by Hack the Entrepreneur, the book, hack number 46, UGG Boots, an incredible vision. You don't climb straight from nothing to something big. You hit an obstacle, climb over it, and reach the next level of the plateau. You cross the line again, cross another obstacle, and climb to the next level again. The more you do that, the more you will look back and realize how far you've come. It's all about overcoming each obstacle as it hits and not giving up. Brian Smith, founder of UGG Boots. You can get that and 49 other brilliant hacks in my book, Hack the Entrepreneur, as well as the very best work that I have ever done in my life. Seriously, I poured my heart and soul into this one to help you do work that matters this year. Don't take my word for it. Seth Godin says about the book, "This book is filled with gems, with generous insights that can change the way you work. You can make something happen, and I hope you will." Grab a copy of Hack the Entrepreneur today, htebook.com, or go straight to Amazon and look for Hack the Entrepreneur.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. We are back with a regular episode. If you don't know what I'm referring to, you should go back to episode 194, the episode from a couple days ago with Jay Baer. We did something completely different. And I would love your feedback. If you have listened, just drop me an email or hit me on Twitter or something. But John at Hack the Entrepreneur, Johnny at Hack the Entrepreneur, however you want to spell that, it'll come to me. And I would love to hear. I've got some great feedback, both positive and sort of negative, but that's totally cool. I would love to hear what you think of that format and if I should do more of it. All right, let's get to it. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a content marketing consultant, copywriter, blogger, speaker, and an entrepreneur. He's the founder of Feldman Creative. Feldman Creative was founded in the Silicon Valley in 1995 when my guest escaped alive from the advertising agency business. The company has partnered with hundreds of corporate marketing groups, small businesses, ad agencies, and design firms across a spectrum of product categories. He is also a prolific blogger and speaker and has spoken on countless stages across North America. Now, let's hack Barry Feldman. Today's sponsor of Hack the Entrepreneur is Casper Mattresses, obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you, as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/hack and using the promo code HACK. Listen, you spend about a third of your life sleeping, so let's make sure you're doing it on a good mattress. Casper brings together two comfy technologies together for better nights and better days. Latex foam and memory foam, so you've got just the right sink, just the right bounce, no matter how you sleep. They've also got a risk-free trial and return policy. They'll deliver it straight to you, and you can try it for 100 days. If you are not happy, they'll pick it back up. At the store, maybe you'll get a minute to try their mattresses. With Casper, you get 100 days to actually sleep on it. It's $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. Compare that to industry averages. That is an outstanding price. So get $50 towards any mattress right now by going to casper.com/hack and using the promo code HACK. Terms and conditions apply always, don't they? Go to casper.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Barry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Johnny. Happy to be in the house of Hack. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. All right, Barry, let's jump into this. Barry, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Wow, you ask tough questions, Johnny. The one thing, I suppose, because Feldman Creative and Barry Feldman are sort of, you know, inextricably intertwined, my business is you know, in terms of how you'd classify entrepreneurship, mine's the solopreneurship. And so it's very important for me to establish and build authority in my niche. And I wasn't exactly early to the process of all things, you know, content marketing, such as blogging. And in fact, I was kind of late. I started in 2011. So I think the answer is guest blogging. I made a name for myself by appearing in some of the biggest and best websites in the world. And I continue to do that. I probably don't do it as frequently as I used to. But, you know, now I do it with a real focus on audience size in mind and relevance, of course. And so in the early ages or stages of putting my thoughts out into the world with a blog, you know, I knew going in, I had done enough research to know that I would experience what everybody does, the crickets thing. So I said, how can I get a bigger audience? And the answer, you know, I didn't make it up. I learned from other bloggers. The answer is a guest blog on popular sites. And that's what I've done.
Nice. I love it. And so the idea of building authority in your niche, it's the building authority is one thing, and it's also building sort of like a personal brand, right? So is there a difference, do you think, between building authority and building celebrity as a personal brand?
I guess it depends on the definition of celebrity. You know, when you cut right to it, I probably know, you know, if I am celebrity in online marketing, that doesn't feel right. You know, I'm not a celebrity, but I'm, you know, I'm on lists of blogs you should read and influencers you should know about and, you know, Twitter people you should follow and so forth. So, you know, that I guess that's a form of celebrity is internet famous, if you will. And every niche is going to have that, you know, is going to be looking at that in a different way, I think, from an audience point of view. But certainly where you're published and, you know, where getting interviewed and getting invited to roundups and speaking opportunities, you know, the list is fairly long for things with which you'll build your authority and get recognized. But I think, you know, answer your question finally here is no. I think, you know, however egotistical it sounds, you probably are trying to, you know, become a celebrity inside of that, you know, narrow slice that you call your niche.
Yeah, exactly. It's a hard thing to sort of differentiate, but I was wondering if maybe there's like a mindset sort of change when you enter a market and you're trying to get that authority. Are you doing it for celebrity's sake or are you approaching it in a different sort of light? But they are kind of hand in hand.
Yeah, you're approaching it to increase the size of your audience.
Exactly, exactly. So you said you entered this market in 2011. So let's go back then if we can. And if you have to go back before then let's do that. But there seems to be this time, Barry, in every entrepreneur or solo entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things, that either they have this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or as mostly seems to be the case with my guests, they find that they simply just cannot work for someone else anymore. So Barry, I would love to know which side of the fence you see yourself on. And can you take us back to when you discovered this about yourself?
Well, that was a long question and I wasn't writing it down. But while that's still fresh in my memory, I'm going to say B came before A. So choice B was, you know, I have to work for myself. That definitely came first because I might own the record for number of jobs I was fired from. It's been a while. People haven't fired me from my job since the 90s, and that's because I haven't had a job since the 90s. But, you know, I was a bit of a strong-willed punk growing up, and there was a whole bunch of, you know, you don't fit here, kid. Get out of here. And boy, that happened a lot more times than I can count. And then even in my professional life, after having gone to college for 6 years, I lost a few jobs in the field of advertising too. And not as many. I learned to play the game ever so slightly better. But I always had strong opinions and I almost never edited them. And I tend to say what I'm thinking and tend to challenge authority. And therefore, I wasn't a good fit for working for companies. And, you know, the bigger the company, the worse fit I was. And so when I did succeed early in my career, it was with small agencies where I could have some say in the direction of the company. But ultimately, you know, still I'd go to, you know, a small agency like the last one I worked for was mid-size, I guess, by Silicon Valley standards, like 25, 30 people. And I'd be in a meeting really biting my tongue, thinking I better not say what I'm thinking. And, you know, those agencies, they make their living off of 2 to 5 substantial accounts. And if, you know, opinionated Barry comes out and says what he's really thinking, they're going to have one less of them. And so I learned early, that, you know, and I heard this often, you know, Barry, you're not going to be happy until you work for yourself. And so I fall into that, you know, category B. And then, you know, the first thing you said in that, I guess, multiple choice question was, you know, do you need to carve that, you know, path for yourself as an authority in your niche? And I suppose that really came late because I hung my shingle, Feldman Creative, you know, freelance copywriter, creative director in 1995, when I started blogging in 2011. I thought blogging was bullshit, you know, for many years. And in fact, I was sort of offended by web marketing in general. You know, people were telling me how to write, you know, when I've been writing for much longer than them, and telling me how to write for the web. And I thought, I resented the way the web was proliferating because I thought it was really sucking the creativity out of advertising and marketing. And so I wasn't that fast to jump in. And, you know, and I, from an outsider looking in at things like blogging and email marketing, I thought, not for me, you know, and I was wrong.
Wow,
I
you
mean,
were.
I wasn't wrong about all that stuff, but you know, in 2011, I started, you know, with that first part of your question, you know, how can I become, you know, a respected voice and authority and expert in my niche? And, you know, now I, of course, I wish that it was an earlier year than that.
So, how you were wrong, and so writing offline is completely different than writing online, and it really is. I mean, just. I see people who write like they're writing offline still, and it doesn't, I don't think it gets consumed the way it should because we're consuming it in different ways on different devices. But how has it changed your writing in that way?
It's changed my writing in that way by actually learning that what you just said is right, you know, and being the stubborn guy that I was to begin with, you know, I had taken advertising courses and, you know, learned in the school of the real world what works. And there was this, you know, this style of writing that I was extremely good at, the real curiosity gap, if you will. And I think some psychologist researcher named Lowenstein gave birth to that term. That was a killer way to write a headline, you know, and a headline, generally speaking, for me was the cover of a brochure or the headline of an ad. And they could be, you know, as clever as all get out, right? You're inspired by one show award books and, you know, the local awards that you would compete in. And you were looking for like this really clever combination of headline and visual. And if you know, you didn't get the ad if you covered up the headline, and you didn't get the ad if you covered up the visual. And if you look back to the decades that preceded this millennium, those were award-winning ads. And, you know, and a lot of that, even though, you know, people like David Ogilvy and Birnbach, they were sort of straight shooters and they wrote long copy ads, you know, they sort of helped create the mold. If you then say, welcome to the internet, it doesn't work. And I didn't want to believe that. And so to be an effective writer online is often to kiss your babies goodbye. You have to learn how to say, clarity, or you have to agree that clarity beats cleverness. And boy, I didn't really want to agree with that. And so that is not to say, I don't really buy that, you know, I hear this often, you know, just be clear and don't be clever. I'm not buying that. I think, you know, that it's quite an attention war zone out there. You know, it doesn't hurt to be clever. But if you have to make a choice between the two, you do indeed have to choose clarity. So when you're writing for the web, you have to understand that you don't have a captive audience. They didn't buy that thing, you know, they didn't buy that magazine. You know, various media would apply. Now we have our finger on the back button and we have more than one device and we have things to do and we have overflowing inboxes. And so you've very much got to get to the point. And so, yeah, in the age of online marketing, clarity is king. It's all important.
I love that. Clarity is king. Okay, so at the beginning, Barry, you told me that your one thing that has made you the most success has been guest blogging and sort of creating authority in your niche. Now, every expert out there, every blogger out there who likes to talk about productivity and business talks 80-20 rule. So you're supposed to do the 20% and you'll get 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at only and delegate the rest. Barry, can you tell me something in your business that you are absolutely not good at?
How long do we have? Details, organization, and then funny, this stuff sort of changed with the way my business has changed and the way marketing has changed. But probably most of all, the financial side of things. You know, if it's not fun, I don't want to do it. And then when you don't want to do stuff, you generally suck at it. I didn't fail math, you know. I think I could do it. I just don't want to. So I think the list is relatively long. If you know, there was a time when my desktop, speaking of literally and from a computer point of view, were like immaculately organized. And now is not one of those times. You know, I'm probably doing the work of three or four people and probably should delegate better. So that would be on the list of things that I'm not that great at. But business processes and financial processes, systems, they're not strengths of mine. I tend to, I don't know if I'm guilty of chasing shiny objects, but I tend to go where the creative challenge is, you know, and if there are none, I make them up. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've put an idea that just came to me in front of the six or seven that I should have already finished.
All right, so let's move to this then. Projects. As a loose term, you like to chase shiny objects, but you like creative challenges. So projects can be a loose term of any, whether it's a new book, whether it's a new like product you want to create or anything. But I would love to know what it is you go through. And it's probably not because you said you hate sort of processes, but it's probably not a written process. But what's the internal process you go through, Barry, when an idea comes to you? And how do you filter it to decide that, yes, this is actually something I should put my time, energy, and resources into?
You know, because we've talked before and we exchanged books, that I recently published SEO Simplified for Short Attention Spans. That's a short book, obviously, about SEO, where sort of a mainstream hack such as myself, a marketer, a writer, explains to people that don't want to get, you know, schooled at the MIT level and in code and so forth, what they need to understand about SEO. And so the process often has a lot to do, I think, with the opportunity to do well on search. It doesn't sound as good as I'd like it to, but I'm generally reading. I'm reading like crazy. I'm reading books about marketing. You know, I've started lately to listen to more podcasts than I have in the past. I'm reading blog posts of my ever-expanding list of, you know, favorite writers and bloggers. And the list is long, you know, the occasional physical magazine. And I see something that is hot. You know, people like it. I like it. It's being shared a lot. And then I try to think, where's my opening here? Where's that door to having authority here? I'm usually not like fishing. It's usually something that I feel I already have an opinion on and a point of view on. And then I get lost in this thing called Google AdWords. You know, that doesn't mean I'm going to buy pay-per-click ads. It means I'm going to investigate the opportunity to write something that I think can land on page one of Google and therefore, you know, be a traffic driver to my blog and my website. And so that happens to me, I must admit, every day. I wish it wasn't the case, but yeah, I go, oh, okay, so that one's hot, and the sooner I get to it, the better, before somebody else does. So that's it. And then comes the fun factor. You know, I have, probably like a lot of writers, I have a heap, in my case, it's on Dropbox, of unfinished pieces. And I usually put something down immediately, the inspiration, perhaps some of the keyword research, definitely the keyword ideas. Usually a placeholder headline, and often links, like places where I got the idea, places where I'll embellish the idea, places I might cite. And I put that stuff down, and that file is massive. And there's an amazing amount of those things that I never finish or publish because, you know, the thrill is gone when I return to them.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. But it's... So coming up with ideas like this is... It's a difficult thing because if we don't have some sort of process, and I don't necessarily have a process either sort of in place to deal with these ideas, but as like entrepreneurs and dreamers, right, we always are coming up with ideas and sometimes we can get distracted by them. But and other times when we create an idea and we decide to run with it, like it sounds like you do quite often, we can also find out that it's completely wrong, right? And that it was just kind of a disaster and a waste of time. And as entrepreneurs and as human beings in general, one of our greatest struggles that I know is that fear of being wrong, making a mistake, and then failing. So Barry, when you decide to do a project, and then when you find out that it has failed in front of you and that it was the wrong thing for you to do at the moment, can you walk us through sort of how to be wrong like that in your business and not get totally like sideswiped by it?
Well, I think you have to go in. I'm learning this, you know, part of life and business every day, as is everybody in a way. You know, your book, which I'm about 2/3 of the way through, you know, speaks to that a lot. So, I'm learning that from business/self-help books. But, you know, if you're going to be a writer, have a point of view, you're going to be a solopreneur, or you're even going to be successful in a corporation, you are going to, you know, take chances and fail. And so I think, you know, it begins with embracing the idea that a product or a project that didn't unfold and create the sort of outcome that you had hoped for, while you might say that was a failure, it's simply the project itself that was the failure, and it's not you, and you're not going to get better. You're not going to learn. You're not going to advance, and you're never going to push the envelope if you're, you know, afraid of trying. And so, yeah, I publish stuff. I mean, we're talking about writing here. I don't, you know, create software, and I haven't been that good at productizing, although that hopefully is on the radar for Feldman Creative. So my failures and successes are largely pieces of content that, you know, did or didn't catch on, or didn't appeal to people as measured by feedback and sharing and interest in me and my company and so forth. And so, yeah, there's as many failures as there are successes. And I think perfectly okay, right? If they were all failures, I'm doing something wrong. If they're all successes, I'm living in dreamland, because nobody can claim that.
That's a great way of looking at it. I love that. It's the project that failed, it's not you. And you're right. Even if you're working within a company, if you're not kind of pushing it and pushing the envelope all the time and trying to learn and figure out new things, like, it's kind of impossible to not at some point be making mistakes.
Yeah. And then, you know, you're a lemming, but, you know, probably 80% of us are. I think that that's probably changing. But if you look backwards instead of forward, you know, most people took some path through college or some sort of trade learning, and they went to work for somebody, and their agenda was to keep their job and get closer to an age where they had enough money to retire from their job and take care of their interests, you know, afterwards with a fund that, you know, paid for their retirement. Everybody was very careful. And I think that, you know, that really is not a good definition of how the up and coming millennials think. You know, you would know as well as anybody that people are searching for freedom and have a much more of an entrepreneurial spirit than ever before. And so, yeah, if you play it safe, you know, you're probably going to make compromises you regret.
Yeah, exactly. Looking backwards instead of forwards, this is a great segue into my final question for you. There's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we're constantly projecting our success, our view of our own success, into the future, meaning that you'll set goals and metrics for yourself, whether they're revenue or views on a post or anything, but you'll set them 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year out. And right before you hit that goal, Barry, you're going to set bigger, loftier ones into the future. It's just what we do to ourselves. And sometimes we end up living in this gap where no matter what we accomplish, we never see ourselves as successful. So Barry, I would love it right now if you would stop and turn around and look behind you at your whole entrepreneurial journey and tell me how you feel about the wins, the losses, the highs, the lows up until today.
The gap. And then there's the dip, right? Which your book mentions a few times with Seth Godin. Yeah, that's certainly a good and tough question. I think the entrepreneur, the creative person, there's always going to be an unquenchable thirst, you know, and I think no matter how much you accomplish, you know, why won't Mick Jagger stop making records, you know, for Christ's sake? there's a creative energy that drives him to just keep doing it. You know, it's what he does. And so Yeah, I look back, made a million mistakes, learned the solutions to a lot of them, in most cases, thanks to some sort of, stubbornness, probably too late. But I think I can pat myself on the back to some degree for being willing to be wrong, catching on, being a study. One of the things that I admire about, I suppose, myself and my business style is that I am constantly in search of learning. And I think that, that's a good quality that I hope people have. I think if you have a 9-to-5 job and, from 5 to 8, you're doing the family dinner, from 8 to 11, you're watching TV, and then you go to sleep and you get up again, you probably make some compromises in that area. So I think I've learned, to appreciate learning. I always loved school. And now, I try to put a cap on my morning routine for how many blogs I read. And I usually fail to, get to work, as soon as I want to, because there's so much information out there. And so, yeah, that's my look going back. Presently pleased, I don't make every influencer list. I'm not perhaps thought of as the world's greatest, blogger or content marketer. But I'm in, I get in the discussion about people that understand that market and people that can help you. And going forward, I think, we talked about some of my weaknesses. I think, today you really do have to systemize, especially if you want to keep it a one-man show and just have virtual assistants instead of employees. And those are my weaknesses. It's good to know what they are. I'm bringing in some consultants right now as we speak to help me in some of my weaker areas. And yeah, it's such a complicated question, Johnny. I hope I answered it. But yeah, that's Feldman, past, present, and future for you.
You did. You answered it well. I really, really appreciate you answering it like that. So Barry, in passing, we've got to mention your business. I would love it right now if you would specifically tell the listener where they can go find out more about you and your business.
All right. Well, I did say at the top of the program that Barry Feldman and Feldman Creative are, one and the same. My website is Feldman Creative. And, the second word there sort of describes what I do. I come from the advertising and marketing background. And past 4 or 5 years, I've become a content marketing specialist. My email signature, it says, I call myself the online marketing freak. So I'm kind of a generalist, but, if you need my help with something, chances are I could be helpful with you, with your business in improving your website and your conversion. And that's going to have a lot to do with content marketing and lead magnets and lead capture and lead nurturing and all that stuff. So find me at Feldman Creative. And there, of course, is links to all of the places where we can connect. Twitter's my favorite. I'm a Twitter freak, and Twitter, I'm at Feldman Creative.
Excellent. So I will link to FeldmanCreative.com and Feldman Creative on Twitter, as well as SEO Simplified for short attention spans. And I'm going to try and find a link to the Curiosity Gap as well. And I will put those in the show notes. So when you stop riding your bike or driving in a car or commuting on a train and get back to a computer, those will be waiting there for you. And yeah, check out more of Barry's work. I know that you'll like it a lot, and it will help you and your business. So this has been an absolute blast, Barry. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. And just please keep doing what you're doing, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
My pleasure, Mr. Naster. Rock on.
Kim, thank you so much for joining me. That was a lot of fun. And I hope you out there listening enjoyed that as much as I did. We went some interesting places that I wasn't expecting to go with Kim. And the reason Kim and I had kind of hit it off, I was on her show and I had never spoken to her before. And she asked me to be on her show and I was, and we kind of just hit it off. And so it was one of those conversations where at the end I was like, you got to be on my show because you have a cool story. And really, I really dig Kim's perspective on business and in life. So I'm glad she decided to join me. So we've reached the point of the show where I have to go back. I have to go back and I have to listen to what Kim said. And I have to find something, because always at this point, this is where we're looking, right? So I went back and I looked through. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 spots I had to go back and listen to. So I went back, and the second time through, I got it down to 3. Then there was two, and then there was one. There was one thing that Kim said that absolutely just stood right out to me. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
In fact, I was sort of offended by web marketing in general. You know, people were telling me how to write, you know, when I've been writing for much longer than them and telling me how to write for the web. And I thought I resented the way the web was proliferating because I thought it was really sucking the creativity out of advertising and marketing. And so I wasn't that fast to jump in. And, you know, and I, from an outsider looking in at things like blogging and email marketing, I thought, not for me, you know, and I was wrong.
And that's the hack. Barry, Barry, Barry. I love this. So it takes a big man to admit that he was wrong. And I'm glad you did, because it makes a really good point. Lots of us as entrepreneurs and as business people, right, we are caught up in our businesses. There's a lot to do to build and grow a business. There really, really is. And you can't always, I'm going to quote unquote say, keep up with technologies. There's new apps, there's new social networks, everything that comes out all the time. Some people just want to be constantly distracted with that stuff. I think that's wrong. But you cannot ever deny the fact of technologies and accepting them. Some people like to fight. And so if it's a new app, who cares, right? If it's the latest Twitter, who cares? If you don't want to use it, fine. I think you can get away with it to a certain degree. But the internet in general, as a technology that is going to, has obviously completely transformed the world now. There was a time in 1995 when Barry started that this sounded crazy and this was never going to take off. People wouldn't buy on the internet. Then 2000 happened, then 2010, and it's obviously morphed and it's never going back. There's still people and entrepreneurs out there and business owners who want to deny the fact of the internet or just ignore it and just think that it's not necessary. That's completely wrong and you will lose doing that. You absolutely will. You have to admit and you have to just give in to some technologies and know that they're there and you have to implement them into your business. The internet is obviously one of those. Learning to write for the web is absolutely essential. Content marketing in general, all businesses now are content businesses and media businesses. Whether you like it or not, that's how customers are going to find you. They're going to know you, they're going to like you, they're going to trust you, and they're going to buy from you. That's how it works. You have to know this stuff. And Barry fought it, which lots of people do, but then he admitted he was wrong and he's learned it and now he's almost mastered it. He's gotten really, really good at it and that's transformed his business. So it's true. Don't worry about finding every next app that's coming out there, but do stay in touch and do know that you are going to have, you can't ignore social media altogether. You cannot do that this day and age. I mean, again, go back to that last episode, 194, with Jay Baer, where we talk about customer service as the new marketing. This is real. These things are real, and they're not going to change, no matter how much you dislike them or not. So stay not at the forefront of technologies, but understand and be mindful of where technology is going, and make sure you go at least follow along with it. But don't try and just, well, if I just stay back, maybe it'll not, it's like you're not going to stop technology from changing. Like taxi companies are not going to stop Uber from changing the transportation industry. Hotels, no matter how much they complain, are not going to stop Airbnb from transforming the way people travel and rent rooms and stay places. It's not going to happen. You can deny it all you want, but you won't. You might as well sort of go along with the trend and figure out how your business can fit into it in a smart, smart way. Barry, thank you so much for that. All right. It's been a blast. Thank you so very much again for joining me. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. Go there. Stop by and check out Jay's episode, the one from before this, 194. And I would love, love, love to hear what you thought of it. It's easy to find. Jay Baer, he's the only person ever to be a guest twice on Hack the Entrepreneur. Come on. If that doesn't pique your interest, what will? All right. This has been a blast. I appreciate you stopping by. I truly, truly do. And just please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.